Welcome to the Cognac Expert Calendar podcast, hosted by Taylor.
So today I'm very pleased to be speaking with Pierre-Louis from Gibouin Cognac. Pierre-Louis, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Great, it's nice to be with you. So for our listeners who may not know, can you tell us who you are and what you do at Gibouin Cognac?
Yes, so I am Pierre-Louis Gibouin. So it's been now 3 years that I've taken over the business after my parents. I work with my brother. His name is Théophile. And we share the responsibilities in the domain like this. So Théo is in charge of the vineyards and the distillation. And I am in charge of the aging, blending, and sales.
Okay, great. And so I'll have some general questions about the house, but before I get to those, can you tell us what cognac we are tasting today?
So today it's going to be a Cognac Borderie vintage 2002. Cask strength, actually not exactly cask strength because it was reduced a few times to drop the alcohol up to 43.3, like it is right now. But except water, there is nothing, absolutely nothing added in this cognac. Just water and cognac and no additives, no coloring, nothing else, and no filtration.
Great. I'll have some more questions about that cognac later on. But before I get there, can you maybe give a presentation of the house, example, its location, size of vines, and the range of cognacs that you produce?
Yeah. So Gibouin is actually a family-owned business. So it's been in the family since 1830. So Theo and I are the seventh generation running the cognac business. And we currently run 25 hectares divided into two appellations. We have 10 hectares in the Fambois appellation in South Charente, about 25 minutes south of Angoulême. And then we have 15, 17 hectares in Chèvre-Richemont, where the main domain is located. And in Chèvre-Richemont, it's in the Borderie. So Borderie is the smallest and rarest appellation among the cognac region. So our vineyard is located in the Pays-Bas of the Borderie. So Lauerland, a soil made with dark clay and gypsum. And so it gives really strong flowers and fruit aromas to the cognac, which is really a particularity of the Borderie, of the Pays-Bas, of the cognac from the Borderie in the Pays-Bas.
And how does the Pays-Bas contrast with the plateau in the Borderie? Is there a big difference in the cognacs?
Yes, actually, there's quite a big difference. So I would say that the Borderie from the plateau will be in somehow a little bit more similar to the Champagne cognac, with more fineness and a little bit longer finish in the mouth, whereas the cognac from the Pays-Bas are really full-bodied, full of fruit, really explosive in terms of fruit, but with less fineness and a finish which will remain longer, shorter in the mouth.
You said that you took over the domain with your brother 3 years ago. Can you describe some of the challenges of coming back and running the domain on your own with your brother?
Yes. So actually, we were quite lucky because our parents, when they retired, they left a company which is really in good health. And so that's pretty good because we could make some investments and basically do whatever we wanted at the beginning. And also our father and our mother just are not on our back every day. And they just say, okay, so do what you want and try. And okay, we are the old generation. And so now you need to make your own proof. And so just act as you want. And so that's really, really, in my opinion, a big advantage to have such parents. Because, I mean, I have some friends and unfortunately, it's not going so well with the old generations. There's always a conflict of generations, which is not really helpful for the business. But with my brother, so right now actually it's running quite good. We have good complementarities, but we also face many challenges. And the first of them is the climate change. Actually, we are suffering a lot, especially in the lower land, so in the Pays Bas, of the drought. So actually, it's made with clay, which is a little bit like a sponge. So it can be full of water, and so it keeps the water. But then when it gets dry, it will be very hard to get the water again inside the sponge. And when it evaporates after this, I mean, when it evaporates, just like a sponge, which is dry, it will be very, very, very tough, you know? And so with no more water, and the vines are suffering a lot. And so this is the main challenge that we are facing right now, is how to handle the climate change and how to make sure that we can actually continue growing the vines in good conditions without having too small berries and full of juice and also aromas.
Gosh, so what kind of things can you do to fight the dryness and the heat that's coming through the region these last years?
Yeah, so it's absolutely not easy, but we try in terms of culture to. So it's been now 2 years that we are putting seeds of some weeds in the soil, which are actually a kind of beetroots. I mean, not beetroots, but kind of beetroots, a little bit like this, radish and lentils. I mean, several kind of plants that will actually be beneficial for the soil. They will take place of the weeds, which we don't want, and which pump the water from the soil. And then when June is coming, we cut all the seeds to liberate, I mean, to free all the nitrates from the plants to give it back to the soil and then to the vines. And those weeds are making like a cover of the soil to prevent the water from evaporating, actually. And so this is a way to fight against the climate change, which is actually quite good. And that's why actually right now we have just been seeding for the third year. We are quite happy with the results, but it's not enough. And we need to continue to find new ways of culture. Actually, watering the plants is not allowed. I mean, it is allowed with your own water, but you cannot use the water from the public system. So we are lucky to store water, rainwater, in not natural tanks, but tanks that existed for years. And so we can water the very young vines because their roots are quite small and not deep enough to get the water. So we need to help them with this water that we collect. But otherwise, it's still a big challenge, and we haven't found all the solutions yet.
Okay, understood. And so getting back to your parents, you made it very clear that they let you and your brother do as you wish. I suppose they're still around to help or to give advice if you want it?
Yeah. You're right. Actually, our parents are not behind us, but actually they are really helpful. And they are like, okay, tell me what you want us to do and we will help you. And actually right now our father is coming quite often to the domain to help us, mainly for the blends, because actually he's still the nose of the Gibouin. And there is no new assemblage, no new blends of Pinot, but also of Cognac, which I make myself, actually. I always need my father's stamp.
It probably takes time to be able to replicate the same blends or even confidently create your own blend with your own style and your own signature, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Of the 25 or so hectares that you have, is all of that for the Jibuan production, or do you sell some of that to some big houses?
We sell a little bit to Courvoisier, only to Courvoisier, which is one of the big houses. Our vineyard of the Fambois is almost entirely sold to Courvoisier. Actually, it depends on the harvest. If we get quite a big harvest, of course, it will be less sold to Courvoisier. But in general, it's like 80%, which is sold to Courvoisier. In the Borderie, we sell around 30% of the product. We still need them. It's a big relationship. And so a very long relationship, like 35 years old relationship. And it's really helping us to give us leverage for direct selling.
Great. Yeah, it's a two-way street. They depend on you and you depend on them. So it's a good relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's right. That's our plan, actually, with my brother, is to emancipate from Courvoisier and then to sell our own production just directly to grass handles and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Now, a question about harvest. This may be a sensitive question, not sure, but I saw this year, for example, the natural rendement or the yield is around 14.2 hectoliters of alcohol pure per hectare, but that you're only allowed to commercialize 10.5 hectoliters of alcohol pure per hectare. That's a big difference. Can you explain what do you do with the difference between what you're allowed to commercialize and what nature actually gives you?
So yes, so every year there is a quota in French. I don't know the name in English,
but quota.
A quota, which is voted between the merchants and the cognac makers. And this year the quota was 10.5 hectoliters of pure alcohol for 1 hectare. The harvest this year for most of the producers is really huge. And there is actually, so the maximum yield that you can make for cognac is 16 hectoliters of pure alcohol per hectare. And so the difference between the quota and this maximum yield is what we call the climate storage, the réserve climatique in French. And so it's basically eau de vie, so you can distill this, and this eau de vie must be stored in stainless steel tanks, not to get wooded. And in case of climate problems and because of hay or anything, and that you lose your harvest, you can take out this eau de vie from the stainless steel tanks, and it will make a complementary revenue for you because you lost a bit of your harvest. But what you produced above 16 hectoliters of pure alcohol per hectare is actually lost. I mean, you are not allowed to do anything with this. So legally, you can't do anything. You can sell them as wine or juice for other, to make brandies or stuff like this, but make cognac, it won't be allowed.
Okay, so this year, there will be a pretty significant climatic reserve, so eau de vie stored in steel tanks.
Absolutely. Most of the producers are making, again, their réserve climatique this year, which they couldn't actually make in the previous years because the quota was very, very high. And so basically, they were allowed to sell almost everything they produced.
Understood. Okay, great.
I mainly say they because we are unfortunately not in this situation at Gibouins. The yield in the Borderie du Pays-Bas are mainly lower than in the other regions because of the soil, which is quite complicated to grow. It makes really fabulous eau de vie, but with much lower yields than in other regions.
Okay. And so getting now to the Jibuan cognacs, can you talk about the range that exists today? And then as a second question, can you talk about new ideas or projects that you have for the future?
So right now, actually, we sell Cognac and Pinot de Charente, so mainly from the Borderie. We sell a little bit from our vineyard in the Fambois, but not so much. For Pinot de Charente, we currently sell 5 different Pinot, mainly young Pinot. We launched a new Pinot this year, which is a rosé, a very fresh rosé with raspberry and grenadine flavors. Actually, we started selling it from June, and it's almost sold out. We are quite happy with how it went. And regarding Cognac, actually, we have 4 blends. So 1 VS, 1 VSOP, 1 Napoleon, and 1 XO. And then around this, we have the vintages and cask strengths, if I can say, with vintages. This is our current range. Right now, we are working with an agency to make a better packaging, and which we really hope to be able to launch middle of 2024. With those blends, the cask strength vintages, and we would like to work with some limited editions, like once or twice a year, which we are already working on, about special cognac or special casks, which we want to put in light, to show. But this is the challenges for the range. We planted 1 hectare of Folle Blanche and a little bit of Colombard to make new cognac. I mean, not only Uni Blanc, but new things and offer new flavors to the customers. But with cognac, we need to be patient. And so we think that we'll be able to offer something interesting in 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, got to be patient. And so I noticed that the vintage range has quietly undergone a change, meaning that now they are being released either at cask strength or with a reduction, but over proof. Mm-hmm. I assume that's your idea?
Yes, it's my idea. That's right. That actually my father, since 1994, dedicated 2 barrels for 2 vintages, but he made the final reduction right after the sales to 40%. In my opinion, this reduction is a little bit hard for the cognac, because I mean, reductions are quite hard for cognac in general. It needs to be done very carefully so that it doesn't make problems to the cognac. And so we reduce our vintages, but in the first 5 years of the aging. And then we just leave the cognac in the cask and naturally reducing up to 44, 45. It depends. I mean, we make 3 reductions in the first 5 years, and then the cognac will be after 20, 25 years around 44 to 48%, something like this. So that actually we get the cognac, which for almost 15 years suffered from absolutely nothing. So, and it's really, it just stayed in its cask, really with the flavors which are concentrated without too much rot water in somehow. And in my opinion, it gives much more intense flavors to the cognac than that 40% vintages.
Right. Yeah, I think it's an interesting move, because you still have your blends, which have mm-hmm. a place and are important, but it's interesting to let these vintages stay at a slightly higher proof. There's an audience for that today, definitely.
Go ahead. One cask of vintages is sold from 20 to 3 years old, when the vintage is 20 to 30. And then we keep the second cask to be released when the cognac is more than 30 years old. Ah. So the thing is that 94 is almost finished, is unfortunately over. 95, we still have a few liters for ourselves. But from 96, so in 2026, we should be able to release vintage 1996 with 30 years old.
Okay, so like the vintages are released at 20 years approximately, And then the second barrel is hopefully released around 30 years.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay.
That's the plan.
Great. And curious question, will you do the same thing with your Fambois? Because that could be interesting to see a Fambois vintage at a slightly higher proof to make comparisons and to taste.
We need to think about this. Actually, Fambois, we work with vintage right now, which are sold to private customers at 40. That's right. We sold many, not many, but a few Fambois vintages to professional at different ABVs. So between 44 and so without final reduction. So actually, we can find on the market our Fambois at not 40% ABV, but right now at the domain to direct private customers, we have always been selling our Fambois at 40. But actually, this is something that we need to think about it to give more room and more space to our Fambois cognac compared to our Borderie, so that actually we are quite lucky to have two appellations, Fambois and Borderie, and we should be working more about those differences of the soils when the rest is actually exactly the same. Actually, it's just the soil which is different, but the cognac makers, I mean, the techniques, the distillation and stuff are the same.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. I can't think of many houses that could propose a Borderie and a Fambois with exactly the same production methods. That would be interesting.
Yes, actually, it's interesting that because also our Fambois and our Borderie are really, really different. I mean, they are located 60 kilometers far, one vineyard from the other, which is absolutely not like we can quite often find cognac makers which own a few hectares of Borderie and just 5 kilometers further, a few hectares of Fambois, something like this. Our vineyards are really different. Lower land in the Borderie, very high for the Fambois, very hilly, 200 meters high. But both of those vineyards are family vineyards. Fambois from my grandfather, my father's father, Borderie from my grandmother, my father's mother. And when they married in 1953, they reunited those vineyards together, which my father ran and which we are running with my brother too.
So now let's move back to the 2002 vintage Borderie cognac. What can you say about this cognac?
Yes, so it was distilled in 2002 or early 2003, actually, by my father, François, with the family pot still, 25 hectoliters big, with its own lees. So we distilled with its own lees and then stored in oak cask barrels of 350 liters. Then actually it was reduced a little bit at the first beginning and a little bit at the end. The last reduction was made in January this year, actually. Not to calculate the exact ABV, but to get something around 43 to 45. And so I think we reached 43.4. So it's a vintage which I am really keen of. It's quite bold, quite fruity, quite smooth on the nose. And then we get with time some a bit roasted flavors, cinnamon flavors, quite smooth on the throat when you swallow. In our vintages right now, the 2002, which we have in our range, is the one I am the most keen of, actually. Much more than 98, which is quite aggressive. 99, which is very nice, but more on the beer here. It's really bold, really smooth, really fruity, and really comfortable.
Great. Okay. And in terms of the oak barrels, how much time, if you know, did the cognac stay in new oak barrels?
Oh, actually, for our vintages, we only work with old barrels. So basically, we fill one oak barrel, which is more than 4 years old, right after the distillation, and then we bottle directly from the barrel to the bottle, but in the same barrel.
Okay, yeah. So same oak barrel, but it's an old one.
Yes, actually, we don't change the barrel. It's just single cask cognac, actually. So only one cask during its lifetime before it is bottled. And actually giving new oak flavors would be too much for single cask, in my opinion, actually. I haven't tried, actually, to leave one cognac in a new cask for 20 years. Maybe I should.
So that's really interesting, because what you're doing is a true single cask cognac. Because
absolutely,
we see single cask, we hear it all the time, but the reality is the producer's moving it from new to old barrel to this barrel to that barrel. A cognac might have seen three or four different casks by the time it's bottled, yet it's still called a single cask, curiously. So what you're mm-hmm. doing are true single cask vintage cognacs.
Absolutely.
Great. And can you tell me a little bit about the cellar? Is it humid? Is it dry? Somewhere in between?
It's mainly humid, actually. It's really humid, actually.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And actually, in my opinion, humid cellars are very important for the cognac. I mean, not to give too dry cognacs. And we get not a constant temperature in the cellars, but with a very high humidity rate. In some cellars, we are around 15 and 25 degrees maximum. Yeah, 25 really maximum when summer is really high, but yeah. Not that huge temperature variation actually.
Yeah. Okay. And so now, for somebody who's just getting introduced to Jibouin, and you had to recommend to them two cognacs, one to begin their journey, and then a second cognac to continue their journey, how would you suggest that person start?
So if it's not really a big cognac connoisseur, I would recommend drinking first or one of our blended cognac. And in my opinion, our VSOP, which is a 7 to 9 years old cognac, is really a good cognac to get the footprint of Jibouin, actually. The VSOP is really like a standard house. So it will basically give the signature of the house. And then to continue the journey, so either getting to something a little bit older, like the Napoleon or the XO, or switching to the vintages cognac, the cask strength vintages. But for the vintages, in my opinion, the comparison between the vintages is something which is really, really nice. I mean, you, with our vintages, it's the same soil, the same master distiller, the same aging processes and stuff, but just because of the climate at that time, and of the barrel which kept the cognac for 20 or 25 years, you get huge differences between one vintage and another. And so comparing vintages together is really a nice session. I mean, yeah, a nice thing to do. So yeah, so starting with VSOP and then maybe switching to the vintages, but take two vintages to compare.
And this 2002 would be a perfect start, I guess.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time. I think there's some very exciting things in the future for Jibouin. There are already exciting things happening. I think the vintage line moving to slightly higher proof is interesting, and there is an audience for that. So these are cognacs to look out for. So thank you very much for your time. Happy holidays. And I look forward to seeing you and speaking again soon.
Thank you very much.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Thank you for listening to the Cognac Expert Calendar podcast. Tomorrow is another day, another cognac.